Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, I'm so glad to have you with us today. I'm sitting here in Colorado looking out my window, and we're starting to get a little bit of snow, which I love. It really gets me into the mood for turkey and the holiday season and all of that. So I hope that you're enjoying your day as well. And I want to welcome you to We Uplift Radio. We are here really to support and uplift, to encourage and empower you. And We Uplift Radio is brought to you by the Whispering Energy Collaboration. If you want to take your business to the next level in an atmosphere of integrity and cooperation, I hope that you will stop by whisperingenergy.com to learn a lot more. The website itself is just like an oasis to go to, so I hope you'll stop by. My name is Aricia LaFrance, and I'm a psychological marketing strategist specializing in helping helpers and healers, really, to grow their business quickly and as the artisans that they are. So to learn more about what I do, I hope you'll drop by AriciaLaFrance.com. And today I'm really pleased to invite Eleanor Suss. She's been on our show before to talk about her other bestseller. She is the CEO of Smooth Sail LLC, a sales training company. And she teaches people how to apply relationship selling skills to every endeavor, including job interviewing, working on their book, building their business. And Eleanor is the author of the international best-selling book, Nice Girls Do Get the Sale, Relationship Building That Gets Results. And I love that book. I recommend it to pretty much everybody. I think it's fantastic. And that book was published by Source Books. You can find it out on Amazon or pretty much anywhere books are sold. And that book was featured in Time Magazine, and it's been translated into multiple languages. I think it was just recently translated into Chinese. So this, these lessons really apply to everybody worldwide. And today we're going to be talking about her new book called Hired. So, Eleanor, welcome.
Well, thank you, Aricia. That was a lovely introduction. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, in your book, you talk about how a lot of people have some kind of funny ideas about sales, that it's like dishonest or sleazy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it doesn't have to be that way. And if you meet me, you'd probably be shocked I was in sales, except that I'm pretty outgoing and love meeting people. I describe the selling as the friendship process. When do you work to really get to know the other person as you would have as a friend, it's an entirely different process. And I suggest to clients and audiences that they think about their purchasing activities. Most people love purchasing, and it's just really the other side of the equation. So what is it about purchasing that you like? Is it the excitement of getting what you want? Who are the people that you go back to continually for the same service, and why is that? What kind of service do they provide? And when you figure that part of the equation out, then you can go to the other side of it and offer the same type of service. And then you won't feel bad about selling at all. You'll know you'll be helping the other person just as you're being helped when you purchase. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the work that I do with psychological marketing strategies, and again, when I'm talking with people, they need some ideas in terms of selling, in terms of marketing, but a lot of times they're tripping over their own mindset about, I don't know if I want to be a salesperson, especially helpers and healers, I think. They feel like their work is sort of spiritual, or their work is, you know, really helping people and uplifting people. And they have the idea that sales is just negative and sleazy and, you know, dishonest, all of those kinds of things. And I was so happy in your first book you know, you really talk about that, and that actually helped me with some of my old mindset stuff that was kind of stuck in there about what sales means. So I really appreciate you reframing it. I think that's a really good thing.
Sure, and another one particular for the clientele you just mentioned, I also suggest that you think about when you go into a doctor's office, what do? They take a notepad and a pen, and they ask you, why are you there? What's wrong? How can I help you? And start, you know, taking the whole list down. And then they formulate ideas that might help. And it's the same thing if you go on a formal appointment or clients come in. It's you begin as a consultant, get why the other person is there with you, make that long list, ask all the associated questions, and then you can start throwing ideas out. Have you ever thought about this or that? And how about trying, you know, XYZ? And really, that's the whole key. The problem is the old-fashioned style where people thought they had to twist your arm to make a sale, and that's what sticks in our mind. But if you just go to the doctor or why you purchase, you'll be far better off and leave all those old thoughts behind.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a really good tip. When I've talked with coaches, because I work, you know, with a lot of coaches and therapists, and they'll be talking about that, how you know, how they think of sales as that pushy, kind of obnoxious, forcing people to sell. And I'm like, well, think of somebody who's a professional. I mean, you're a professional. So, you know, taking a look at that, how do doctors, how do attorneys, how do, you know, people who are respected professionals, how do they act? And you're right. It's really about reaching out and saying, how can I help you?
That's all it is. And yep. When you ask, how can I help you, as we both know, you'll know whether you have a valid prospect or not.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So, you know, you say that in the book, you say anytime you express an opinion or make a request, you're selling. And you also talk about having a strong belief system in place. Can you talk about those things?
Sure. When you make a request, you need to have the other person buy into what you're asking for, even if it's just as simple as getting your significant other to take you out to dinner and they don't really want to go. How you present it is will grant you the request or have an argument at hand. And the same thing with anything that you want in life. It's how you present it. So you may as well know the way to do it, and the way to get your request granted is to really understand where the other person is coming from. If they're tired, if they're upset, if they have challenges, they don't feel good. And again, going back to that doctor analysis, it's getting all those things listed in your mind if you know them well. And then you can make the request to move forward. You know what they'll buy into. And in successful sales, you need 3 to 5 buy-ins and 3 to 5 needs. And so the buy-ins are the mini agreements. Oh, I know you're tired. You'll feel relaxed. We'll get a glass of wine over dinner. We'll chat. We'll be relaxed. We don't have to worry about cleaning the dishes. Do you see where this is going? And pretty soon they'll say, yeah, let's go out for dinner. So it's really the sales process, and I apologize. You asked me a second question, Aricia.
Oh, that's okay. When you know what we were talking about is, you know, you say anytime you express an opinion or make a request, you're selling, and you talked about that. The other piece was having a really strong belief system in place, and I think that ties in with what you were just saying.
Oh, the belief system, yes. You have to know you can. There are two quotes I love. Eleanor Roosevelt said, failure is not an option. And Mark Twain said, if you believe you can, you will. And if you believe you can't, you won't. And trust me, I've tested it many times, and that is so right on target. You have to know full well you are going to succeed, whether it's getting the job that you want or making the sale, or whatever it is you want in life. You have to know what you want specifically and then draw up a plan of how you're going to get it and then work at it every day until you do get it. And absolutely, it doesn't matter whether you're selling to a Fortune 100 company, the guy next door, your spouse. You just have to know what it is, what you want, and be determined to get it. And when things don't quite work out, you have to leave the emotions behind, analyze the situation, what you can tweak, and try again. So the whole key is not giving up, but to keep trying until you're successful.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I talk to people about, because when they're just kind of starting off in their marketing, they'll kind of put a little toe into the marketing pool, and they'll try something, and they'll call back, and they'll be like, oh, well, yeah, they didn't want to talk to me, and I don't know, I got kind of discouraged, because it's like I am bothering people when I'm calling, and I'm kind of annoying them, and I don't really know what I'm doing. And they go through this whole thing, and I'll talk with them, and I'll say, are you aware that you are attaching an entire story, taking everything really personally, and you're attaching an entire story to the situation that's probably not even true. And so, you know, I think that when you do have that strong belief system in place and, you know, you call somebody and they're like, no, I'm not interested, you go, oh, okay. And you might even ask them, can you tell me a little bit more about what's going on that you feel that you don't need this? I'm just trying to gather information. You talk about that in your book too, where it's like just sort of gathering information as much as you can, but not taking everything personally.
Exactly. You have to really detach the emotions. And I know when you're first starting out, it's difficult. But what I do to get over that bothering people, when you meet people, whether online or in person, ask when is convenient for them to give you a choice of dates and times and how do they prefer to be contacted. So now you have permission, and that eases the burden, am I bothering them? And then when you contact them, remind them gently that they asked you to contact them at that particular point in time, and make sure certain that it's still a good time for them. So when you proceed with politeness and the permission, it's like permission-based marketing, you're in okay, and it's not a bother, and you have to remind yourself you're there to help them solve their problems. So it's not a bother at all. They want your information. And mm-hmm. that generally turns around the perception of how people feel about pursuing it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, too, you know, depending on your field, you may, obviously, when you kind of first meet somebody, they might tell you a little bit about what's going on for them. One of my favorite questions to ask people when I first meet them and we're kind of networking is to ask them, what's your biggest frustration with marketing, so that they can, you know, kind of expound on what's going on. And then when I tell them, you know, I need to go around and kind of meet some other people, but I would love to talk with you about that. And then, of course, you know, what's the best way to contact you? I love that. I think that's really smart to do. And when's a good time? And also just kind of giving them a little bit in terms of saying, you know, I have some ideas that might really help you. And unfortunately, you know, we just don't have the time to talk about it here, but I'll give you a call and I'll give you those ideas. And that kind of allows them to feel excited about hearing from you, too.
That's excellent. And actually what you're doing, Arisi, is giving them samples of what you do. And that really, it's a great marketing technique and works time after time. So, yeah, that's great advice. Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit, because I love this part of your book where you talk about the sales cycle. So explain a little bit about the sales cycle and how it applies to people in terms of interviewing.
Well, the sales cycle begins with, first of all, your mindset, and that you know you can do the job and do it well, and then building your brand so that wherever you go, whoever you talk to, they always know what they're going to get. You kind of have to make yourself like a box of cereal. And then there's the research that you do. You don't just wander into an interview or any kind of appointment not knowing anything about the company. And I always suggest you have three lists, a must-have or deeply desire, and then there's a definitely do not want, and then your negotiables, you know, give or take, and things that you can ask to be thrown in if not all of your wants are included in the package. But then it's really up to you to do the research as to how you're going to fit in and if you really want the job. So you need to really understand the business news, how it's affecting the company and the industry. So you have all this research to do and find a variety of prospects in the field, and the prospects are the possibilities. And so you might want to interview with competing companies to get insight on the industry itself. And the worst thing that could happen is maybe you'll get multiple offers in the industry. And then when you go into an appointment, it's all the little things that you do in the lobby and meeting people and picking up clues of what's important. And then when you go in and sit down, it's how you conduct the interview. You need to have a two-way interview, like I said, be a consultant, and then know what questions to ask, and many of them are listed in my book.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know how to advance the sales cycle. So the sales cycle is going from point A, getting the information, why did you call me in today, finding out what's important to the company, knowing what the job will entail, and if there's any interaction with other departments, et cetera, knowing what the next steps of the interview are, knowing if you're on target to be the top candidate picked, and knowing what's involved, everything involved with the job and what you should expect next. And possibly even on the first interview, not always, certainly, if you're the candidate of choice or when to expect, you know, a call as to when to start work. So that's the entire sales cycle. It's knowing up front if it fits what you want, filling up your sales funnel with all the prospects or possibilities, and then defining what it is you want versus what they want and which one comes closest to being the ideal job. And then the final one falls through the funnel. It's redefining and really clarifying everything you want, and then you get the job or you get the sale.
So, you know what I love about the way that you're talking this morning, too, is that there's so much fear in the world right now, and I'll talk to people, and they're like, you know, I've just got to find something, anything. I don't care what it is. I don't care if I'm happy in it. I don't care if it pays almost nothing. And when they come from that mindset of they're just, like, really afraid, they tend to sort of create that reality of the crummiest job that there is out there. And I love the idea of, instead of looking at job postings and trying to find work that way, you talk about really looking at prospects, you know, and looking at it from the mindset of, look, I've got these great skills. Any of these companies would be fortunate to have me. I'm going to do a little bit of research about which ones I would like to work with, and kind of turning that whole process around instead of coming from that place of desperation and fear, coming from a place of, you know, I'm good at what I do, and valuing yourself enough to really do the research and learn about the companies that that are going to be a good fit for you, and then going and pursuing those opportunities. I love that.
Well, it's the only way you're really going to advance your career and feel good about going to work. I can tell you earlier in my career, I did the opposite, like you, what you were talking about. Oh, my God, I got to get out of this place. It's horrible. Just anything would be better. And the truth of the matter is, by the first week that you're on that anything new job, it's like, what on earth was I thinking? I'm going to have to interview all over again. It's the
right.
worst thing you can do to yourself. And I understand the fact a lot of people have bills paying up, and they do feel that anything would be better, just, you know, start paying off some of these bills. But I was also in the position where by Sunday afternoon, I started to get a stomach ache and headache thinking about having to go into that office on Monday morning. So I'm here to plead with people. Think about it twice. You don't want to put yourself in that situation.
Yeah, and you bring up another really good point, is that you have to be careful of your health. And if you're in a job that's taking a toll, I know that my husband was working at a job, I don't know, long time ago, and there were people that were dropping over dead of heart attacks. They were having ulcers. They were having all kinds of, you know, very serious physical things. And you know, I mean, headaches, stomach aches, all of that kind of stuff as well. And you're more susceptible to colds and flu and everything when you're miserable and stressed out. I'm actually, one of the books that I'm working on reading right now is about adrenal fatigue and how people are just freaked out right now, and they're just so stressed that their immune systems are being compromised and they're getting sick with all sorts of things. So I would encourage people, you know, really, take a look at what your opportunities are instead of coming from a place of fear and I have to find something right now. Even if part of the truth is that you need to get into something right now, you can use Eleanor's approach and this book, and say the title again, Hired, easy to remember. If you use this book, you're going to be in a much better position to negotiate and get into something that's going to help you to advance your career when things turn around, instead of just getting into something that will just pay the bills and wind up making you sick in the long run.
Yeah, I agree that exactly. Absolutely. It's critical, and it's sad how many young people are ill today because of the stress. So anything we can do to turn that around, that's where we're at.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and you had mentioned, too, when you were talking about the sales cycle, and I've got to mention this right now, too, because one of the things that I love about your book, and you do it in this one, too, is throughout the book, it's just really easy to find what you need. So, for example, as I open it up, it says, if you are currently unemployed, and it goes through and it gives you ideas. And then she has little boxes in here of just really great little tips to remember. You know, selling requires that you put your best foot forward. Networking. It's so well organized that you can find what you need right away. So even if you're in a situation, oh my gosh, I have a job interview in 2 hours, and you pick up this book, kind of, you know, just skimming through it for the pieces that you really need and then reading it before the next job interview that you have, I think it's really good. So I just love how it's well organized and easy to find what you need.
Thank you so much. I have to give the editor credit too. Yeah, she had me reorganize the way I originally wrote it. So I think between the two of us, it was a winning combination.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, tell us, you know, you mentioned in the last thing that I asked you about in regards to the sales cycle, you kind of mentioned branding. And, you know, for some people, they're kind of thinking of cattle out in the field and getting that hot iron, right in the behind. That's not what we're talking about. Tell us a little bit about what you mean by branding and how that affects the interview.
Yeah, it really does. This sounds so old-fashioned, and I understand it, but your words, actions, and deeds have to be consistent. So may I tell a short story about the worst interview I ever had that will, because it works two ways. You have to watch the interviewer that they're consistent like a box of cereal. So I'm in a coffee shop with this guy, and it was one of those times where I thought, oh, anything will be better than what I'm doing now. I've got to get in high tech, and everything will be solved because those are the professional people, right? So here I am in the coffee shop, and this guy is talking to me, and he has this really weird gesture with his neck where whenever he makes a point that's supposed to catch my interest, he jerks his neck to over his shoulder, his face. Really bizarre. And so I'm watching him very carefully. And next thing I know, you know, we're talking about compensation and how I'm going to become a millionaire in this job, you know, almost overnight. And obviously that isn't true. So then he starts. Meanwhile, we're eating cookies and having a cup of coffee, and we've got these dirty little napkins on the coffee table. Next thing I know, he writes the compensation package on this napkin, you know, with my goals for the year on his dirty napkin with the crumbs on it. Pretty disgusting. So would you trust a person like this?
Yeah, it makes me a little nervous. Yeah.
Well, what I did, I didn't trust him, yet I was foolish. I kept thinking, well, it's a stepping stone. I'll probably have to interview soon again, but I've got to get in high tech and out of the old-fashioned business model that I'm in. So before we get up, to his horror, I grabbed the dirty napkin. And trust me, it was one of the better moves I made in regard to this job. I did take the job. It was a nightmare, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And within 2 weeks, I had to go into HR, and I had never done that before, and tell them that he was on my back to make a sale. That's not the way it was laid out when we initially met. And so the next day, we had an appointment for the three of us to talk. I pulled out the dirty napkin from my closet and brought it in. His face was beet red when he realized I had saved it. And, you know, it showed everything he was saying was completely dishonest. So that's what I'm talking about, a brand, your body language, your words, actions, deeds, everything you do have to be consistent or people are going to trap you later down the road. It's really, really important that people can trust you. That's the first step of making a sale, that people have trust and confidence in you. Otherwise, it's going to be a rare day when you make a sale or get the job that you want.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you brought up another good point in that, which is, and you talk about this in your book too, is always get it in writing. So, I mean, I think that's a really important tip, but I think that there might be people that are really uncomfortable with saying to somebody that they might be working for, they're just kind of coming in new and they don't want to make a bad impression. How do you ask to get it in writing without, you know, offending somebody?
Well, any job really, any job offer should list what's expected and the description of the job and what the compensation is. And you just have to, you have to get over that fear and just say, I would love to see it all in writing, and then we can discuss it a little bit further. It actually makes you look more professional rather than just, you know, grabbing the first thing that comes along. What happens is it makes you actually look more desirable, more professional. It's the people who jump at stuff that scares the person offering. So when somebody's a little bit, I'm not saying you shouldn't be friendly. You need to build those relationships and appear to be friendly and easy to work with. But when it comes time to accept, you have to take the more professional route and just say you're going to look everything over and you have a couple other offers on the table, but only say that if it's true. And let them know that you value who you are, and then they will value you.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, and one of the stories that I have about get it in writing, I was working with a client, and he was really upset with the job that he was in. He wanted to get into another job. Just everything was bad about where he was working. And one of the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back was he came in, this was, beginning of the year, and he said, when I was told what my salary was, it was a lot less than what I had been making, you know, from one company to another, and they promised me that I would be getting a bonus in December of between $10,000 and $20,000. So, you know, he's like, I'm one of those shake hands kind of people. So it's like we shook on it. I left. I never got the bonus. And now I'm in a position where when I go into my next job and they ask what my salary is, it's $10,000 to $20,000 less than it should be. And so that can impact my ability to, you know, make a living pretty much from here on out. So what do I do with that?
Oh, you know, that's horrible. Yeah, you absolutely have to get everything in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's a very, very good point. That's a terrible position to be in.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things, too, when people are going in for job interviews, I think one of the biggest hang-ups that people have is trying to figure out, you know, know, do I take this job? Do I not take this job? And anxiety is so high right now. I like to think that it's getting better in terms of the economy and things like that. But when I'm talking with people, they're so anxious about, you know, do I take this job or do I not take it? And they're not sure what to do. And so I love the piece of advice that you give in the book where you say, weigh your must-have list against taking a calculated risk. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because I think it's a really good piece of advice.
Well, in my case, in this particular instance, if it's the one you're speaking to, I applied for a job that was, I felt at the time, was way above my head, but that I could grow into it. And it turned out to be the best job I ever had. Another thing that I did in my career, once upon a time I sold business equipment, including network printers and copiers. And I took a job just because it sounded interesting as a representative to sell print services. And what that did, while it was probably one of the worst jobs I ever had, it gave me inside knowledge of how different departments in very large corporations use network printers and copiers. So within a few short months, there I was interviewing again. But that very next job that was above my head, I grew into it within a few months and became the top producer by the third month because I knew exactly how to sell what I had into these giant corporations. So that was a calculated risk applying for it, but yet the determination that we spoke of earlier that somehow I'll muster up the know-how to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. And when you talk about must-haves, I always think about kind of the other side of it, you know, the things that you don't want or deal breakers. Mm-hmm. When people go in, what are some of the things that, like, if people are listening and they're like, well, what exactly do you mean by a deal breaker? Can you tell us more about what you mean by that?
Well, the previous story I told about recognizing this guy was not a truthful sort of person, that should have been a deal breaker, no matter how badly I wanted to go into high tech. And then say somebody wants you to move your family to Iowa and you really don't want to live in Iowa. That should be a deal breaker. Don't tell yourself, well, it's just for a year and then I'll find something else, but I'll get the experience first. Because quite honestly, you could be stuck there for the next 20 years. You don't know. Maybe the salary's not in your range. And like you said, if you take a salary below what you're worth, then that's going to affect the rest of your career because how can you make up that loss? You can't. It'd be very difficult. And perhaps you have small children. You need to be home late afternoon and evening, and that's when they want you to work. It would put tremendous stress on you and your family. Don't do it. You have to take no job is perfect, let's be honest. But you need to find one that's near perfect or one that will at least offer you some challenge and some way of making a living that's within the hours and location that you want to live. I've heard stories that are just crazy. You wonder, what were those people thinking? Because it turned their life upside down. So you really do need to pay attention equally to what you do want and to what you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
And find a happy medium.
Well, and I like that idea. And I think that it's really true in a lot of areas of our life, whether we're talking about finding a house that we're going to live in or the relationships that we choose to be in or really any of those things. Whatever you do, whatever job you take, starts to set a precedent. And what I love, I've got to tell a personal story here about my son, who's 20 now. He started off in one job and at a grocery store, and he was like, well, you know, I don't like this, that, and the other thing. So he tried another job someplace else. And he was like, you know, I'm not crazy about this, that, and the other thing. And I don't encourage people to job hop from one thing to another. But what I really admired and what I really liked about what he did was he tried a few different things, and then he got into something where he was, you know, all of his requirements were met. He was treated respectfully. He's learning new skills that he really likes. You know, and really maybe what can help people is before you start interviewing to put together a list of what are your deal breakers and what are the things that are your must-haves like you talk about so that when they go in, they're prepared and it's not something where they're sitting in the interview going, something doesn't feel right, but I'm not really sure. And when you do that in the interview, too, you wind up kind of negotiating with yourself and going, well, it's not that bad, and maybe I'll be in Iowa just for a year, and you can kind of fudge a little bit. But when you have it written down beforehand and you know your deal breakers, you know your must-have, you know, then you can work with them better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In fact, you brought up something that I know a young adult that just got out of graduate school, master's degree, and it was in Boston. So you can imagine all those colleges in Boston, everybody graduating at the same time, started interviewing, and she and all her friends were offered these salaries. I think somebody out of high school could have gotten a salary like that. And they had a choice of either paying for food or paying for apartment rent, but couldn't do both. Some of her friends chose to stay and live like a poor student, and she picked herself up and moved to another area where other friends lived and started thriving in the other area and got a salary triple of what she was offered in that college town.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you really need to know what's important to you and what you're willing to do to make a go of it and be happy.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that it takes some courage and some out-of-the-box thinking. I mean, in her case, you know, taking a look at it and going, okay, you know, the market is flooded right here, so where are some other places that would be okay for me to live, that I would enjoy living there, but that I could get a bigger salary? So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's maybe what's required with today's job market is to really look at, you know, what are my other options? How can I really create the reality that I want instead of just kind of being a victim of circumstance and going, well, you know, yeah, the job market's flooded and I'll just take what I can get. And then you're going to be in, you know, you're not going to be able to pay your rent. Like you were
right.
Talking
so
about.
It goes back to your first question about the mindset of what you really believe you can achieve and then drawing up a plan and going for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is really valuing yourself and valuing your own worth. And I think that a lot of people, especially after they've been through a layoff or, you know, they've been unemployed for a time, they can kind of get into that mindset where they devalue themselves.
Yes, yeah, and you have to be very careful. And I think if you're at that place where you're not sure, then go see a coach or call somebody up on referral. Definitely get a referral. But you need to have somebody bring you out of that funk so that you can be back into your positive mindset again and then move forward on a better footing. It's worth the extra expense to be able to move into what you believe you're truly worth.
Right. Well, and it's funny that you mentioned that because you know, I have my book, Unlocking the Secrets of the Successful Career Seeker, and one of the things that I talk about in there is that when we get laid off or we have a disappointment or something like that, we tend to gravitate, some people tend to gravitate towards commiserating with their friends. So they go out to the bar, and they're sitting at the bar, and they're talking about, oh, yeah, I can't believe it, and they didn't appreciate me at all, and, you know, they're kind of going down that path, and then their friend is like, oh, you think you have it bad, you don't know how bad it is, and they're all commiserating, and that's not going to help you find a job. And it's about kind of getting into and finding those people that are successful and connecting with them and then really figuring out ways that you might be able to collaborate together or that you might be able to network together and help each other. And that's why Loco Spring Energy, of course, is, you know, just really helping to uplift each other instead of commiserating, because when you get into that commiserating place, it's sort of a downward spiral.
You know, it's interesting you brought that up, because that's true for anything in life, and in particular for me, for entrepreneurship. Early this year, I told my husband we are no longer going to allow negative-minded people into our home. And as soon as I made that rule and he agreed to it, just everything changed. Business started booming because I started aligning with positive-minded people. And I stopped some of the old ways of doing business and did more online, where it seems to be a gentler population on social media, more forward thinkers. And it just makes a huge difference. So whatever you do in life, you need to be, you always need that profile list, what you want, what you don't want, and keep refining that list. And it goes with the people with whom you associate, and the type of people and where you want to go, whether you're a business owner or looking for a job, and move forward. And everybody has to be positive-minded, or it's just not going to work. I know when my first book came out, people that my old friends made me feel like it was worth nothing because it wasn't a Jane Eyre novel. And, you know, over time we moved away, but that book that was looked at like it was nothing became the international bestseller. So, and it put me in a very different mindset. Isn't that incredible? So it really, really affects your day, your, you know, what you achieve in life. You need to be with the positive-minded people, not people who just say yes to anything and glad hand you, but people who care about you, want you to succeed, and will brainstorm and partner and collaborate, as you said, Aricia. That's what makes the difference for anything you do.
Yeah. Well, and you talk in the book, too, about how your thoughts sell you, and I think that that's so true. It's, you know, when I'm talking with people, if they're in a positive mindset, if they're in a productive mindset where they're valuing themselves and they go in for a job interview, it's going to go completely different than if they just were out with their friends the night before complaining about how awful the job market is and, you know, they've had a crummy morning and they're saying, I don't even know why I'm going to this interview because I'm not going to get it anyway. You've got two completely different interviews.
Oh, positively. And I realize I didn't emphasize one point about selling. Perhaps I did, but I really want to make it on the for the interview. Whether you sell or you're on an interview, what turns most people off is the continual talking. You need to speak in form of questions. And then when you're asked something, try to be a storyteller. I learned this in a public speaking class at Dale Carnegie. When somebody asks you a question that brings a fond remembrance or a funny experience and a smile to your face, in less than 2 minutes, only take 1 to 2 minutes to relay the story to what was said. And you have to let your personal self come out so they begin to trust and like you and have confidence in you, and then bring the conversation back. But that's the only time that you take time to really speak or dominate the floor. The rest of the time, it should be in question form and, you know, answering accordingly.
And I think that that's something that a lot of people struggle with is, what do I ask them in the interview? Because I know when I've talked with people, they've said, you know, if I ask them about the company, it feels like I haven't done my homework and I haven't done my research, and I'm not really sure what else to ask them about. So do you have ideas about that?
Well, one of the first ones would be, can you describe what a typical day for this job description, what it would look like? Do you interact with other teams? Is it a team environment? Is it solo? What would you expect, and what kind of goals would you set out for the person if this person wanted a promotion or wanted to advance to the next level? How would they get there? So you have to, you know, and this would be a little bit further into the conversation. You need them to describe it out so that you can clearly define whether this is what you want or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. So kind of going through and learning about their expectations, what they're looking for, and seeing if it's a fit for you as well.
Right, and then trying to understand if there's actually a career path there or
mm-hmm.
it's a dead-end job. And, you know,
right.
some people don't want to climb the corporate ladder, which is A-okay, but you have to recognize that in yourself. Like for me, when I was doing sales, I never wanted to manage salespeople. That would be a nightmare come true. And so I just wanted to be a salesperson and made it into major accounts, but that would be as far as I ever would have wanted to have gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you're bringing in kind of a whole interesting topic, because I was just having a conversation with somebody the other day about how the workforce is really shifting, and we're moving from this place of I've got to get to the top, I've got to get to the top, to what is it that I would like to do? What is going to make me happy? What am I going to enjoy doing? And instead of this working 80 hours a week to accumulate a bunch of stuff, people are really looking at, you know, I'd like to have some time with my family, or I really don't want to manage people, or I don't want to make it to what is considered the top in this particular field. I'm happiest doing, you know, this other thing that's not necessarily considered the top of the top, but I wouldn't be happy there anyway.
Right, yeah, and you really have to know that about yourself. I know someone that has a 35-hour-a-week job. That's almost unheard of today. So my advice to that person was be very careful before you accept another one, because you're going to be working twice as many hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it better
yeah.
be one that you're convinced you're going to love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good tip, definitely. Well, when people are looking at job seeking and interviewing, we've talked a lot about things that that they should do and good ideas that they could certainly take and use. What are some things to avoid when people are job seeking or interviewing?
For they themselves or knowing what not to take?
I think both sides.
Both sides?
Yeah,
well, okay, a good word of advice is arrive 10 minutes early and no more. If you arrive earlier, people will think you have nothing better to do. In 10 minutes, you can say hi to the secretary. If the secretary seems friendly, ask how they like working there. It might give you some insight. Look for any awards that might have been written, one or artwork or letters from clients. So it gives you a little time to look around the lobby and get a feel for what the office might be. And then you want to be friendly with everybody, no totem poles. You have to act like everybody's the CEO of the company, because very frequently anyone and everyone will report back to the hiring manager about how you treated them. Because that's a good clue as to what your behavior will be like once you are in the job. And then you need to also observe the people there. Do you like them? Do they look like people you'd even want to be friends with? Or would you really, deep inside, rather run away? If that's the case, keep the interview brief and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then how people question you. This to me turned my stomach, but I'll tell you anyways, another great interview I had, it's with a job that I thought I actually wanted until I met the hiring manager. He chose to clean his fingernails with a key while he was talking to me. It was disgusting. So I quickly got up and left. I didn't want to work with someone who had no sense of decency. And he apparently didn't think I was worth his time. Ooh. And see, it was many, many years ago, and I never forgot it. There was another company I thought, wow, it was still in business equipment. I worked for this company. I will have made it. This is the company of companies in the industry. And I met with two men. Oh, and the other thing, this was really interesting. It was in Silicon Valley, and I knew all the buyers in Silicon Valley. I had sold to all their customers. My fame was taking their business away. So you'd think they'd be happy to have me on their team and get their clientele back. Well, the first two male, this was the interesting part, the first two male managers loved me. They said, okay, the next step is to meet with our female manager because she makes the final decision. I go into her office. She's all in gray, no makeup, and her hair's pulled back so tightly that I thought her eyes had to hurt. I exaggerate not. And then I sit down, and after 5 minutes, she said, I would never hire you. And I said, oh, why is that? I could actually feel a sigh of relief at that point. And she said, you're too nice. We don't want nice people on our team.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, who the heck wants to work for a company like that?
I was going to say, time to run away screaming.
Oh, yeah, I was so relieved. And I think it was around that point where I said, I'm going to do something entirely different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. That's
so you have to listen to your intuition and, you know, forget the voices. You need the money. You need the money. Really take a hard, serious look what's going on around you and size the other people up just as they are you. It is a two-way street, and you'll be far happier if you pay attention to what your intuition and everything that you're observing is taken in and really given serious consideration.
Well, and I think that you make a good point, too, because it's like when you're in that interview, if you're kind of checking them out, too, in terms of is this going to be a good fit for me, they will sense that. And I think that that's actually really a good thing because it shows that you have good, strong boundaries, that you're not going to put up with a bunch of garbage. And if you just went in and you were desperate for the job and you would take anything and you go in, they know that they can treat you badly. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but there are some people out there that will, you know, take advantage of that, and then you're in a really bad situation.
Absolutely. And the number one thing for me, you want to know that the people that you're about to go to work for work with integrity. I wound up in a situation that was horrendous. Again, another high-tech company. And I guess I just had bad luck. I don't know what to call it. These people were highly recommended to me, and that's how I went on the interview. And then a little ways into it, it was a very exciting project. Little ways into it, I found out that they were just waiting for me to collect the money, and the service I was selling most likely wasn't going to be put in place. And the second I found that out, I wrote up my resignation letter. But before I walked out the door, I had the biggest clients in the nation lined up to buy. And it was heartbreaking, but I knew I needed to do it. And I called each one of them up, and I said, I just quit this exciting project. When I hang up the phone, I want you to take 5 minutes to contemplate why that might be. And they all got the message. They thanked me profusely. And I walked out with a clear conscience. And as it turned out, it was a few months later that the dot-com bust took place. So, but you have to pay attention to everything that's going on around you.
I think that that is such an incredible story. I mean, not only is it an amazing story, but I think it really speaks to your, you know, integrity and honesty and wanting to make sure that people are getting the information that they need without gossip or anything like that. I love that story. It's one of my favorite stories.
Oh, thank you. I have to work with integrity. And especially when you're in sales or in business, word of mouth gets around very quickly. And if people start spreading news that you don't do so, you're not going to have anything left to sell. And you're not going to be in business very long.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true. Well, we're kind of at the end of our time, almost. I was wondering if there's anything else that you wanted to share that we didn't cover, but what I have to tell people, too, is this hour-long that we have had, that we have talked about different concepts and ideas and advice, pretty much we only covered chapter one, and I want you to know that. This is a really great book, very comprehensive, tons of information. I mean, it's just packed with information. Easy to understand, easy to find what you need. So I'm going to really encourage you to, you know, to pick up a copy of this So, Eleanor, can you tell us, I mean, first of all, where people can get your book, but also, is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you wanted to discuss?
I really appreciate the ability to have the interview today and get the information out to people. And I'm always available for consultation if you want to see if the way I help people is right for you. There's no charge for that, and my number is 800-704-1499. That's 800-704-1499. And as far as getting the book, I need to say there are a couple titles that start with the word hired. What makes mine different, following that, is how to use sales techniques to sell yourself on interviews. It is available in major bookstores and online, and certainly on my website at smoothsale.net, and that's SALE.net. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody. My wish is to help people get back to work. And this book is based upon my own experience as well as years of community service helping people land the job they desire. And it's my wish that I can do the same for your listeners.
Terrific. Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you stopped by. This is just such wonderful information for people who are, you know, in that big boat that we have right now, people that are unemployed or they're underemployed or they don't like their job. And I think that these were really some amazing tips. So thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, and I just want to add, it's never impossible with a flooded job market. My son just got an amazing job, and he just switched 2 weeks ago. So it is possible. You have to keep telling yourself it is possible, anything's possible, and keep going for it. That's the positive mindset.
Yeah, definitely, and that's what I'm seeing, too. I'm finding a lot of that, where people are finding these really, really amazing jobs. They are out there. So thank you for adding that. I think that's an important tip.
Well, thank you very much for having me today, Arisi. It's been a true pleasure, and you're a wonderful host. I enjoyed it immensely.
Good. Great. Well, thanks for coming, and I also want to thank Whispering Energy and remind people to take a trip out to whisperingenergy.com because it's just such a wonderful collaboration. And I also want to thank all of our listeners, whether you were able to join us live or if you're listening by recording. And also thank you to Trinity Damask for providing the beautiful music for our show as we start and at the end. And I would encourage you to visit her site as well at trinitydemask.com to learn more and to hear some of her other songs. So until next week, dear ones, go in peace. And find a great job that you really, really love. Pick up a copy of Hired. It's a good thing. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Hoping to find my way home. I once believed in a place at the end of the rainbow, destination complete. But I know now the journey's the answer to the truth that fading denial, sweep the old.